it's that time of the day when the passes are against the grain and the chats are insightful. This is the Inside Pass, News 24's daily and dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. I'm Simnigwe Tlabanisa. Speaking of insights, I'm joined by my colleague on the ground in France, senior sports writer Kanyiso Chwaku. Chwax, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Have you taken my advice and seen the sights and sounds of France and taken a couple of beers in?
Well, I've had a couple of beers here and there, but I think the quality of beer varies quite significantly here, to a point where you can have a blonde beer at one bar and you have a different blonde beer at the other bar, and the taste varies magnificently. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But no, I've tried, in all honesty.
Admit it, it's not a quality issue, it's a price issue, isn't it?
Nope, it is a quality issue. I'm not a wine connoisseur. If I was a wine connoisseur, maybe I would throw up a bit of hands. When we're in Bordeaux, for example, understandably so, on your way to Bordeaux from Marseille, you see all the vineyards and stuff, especially when you're about an hour and a half out from Bordeaux. When you see the prices, look, they kind of put that French area in the shade. They are not cheap at all.
Right, before I get both of us fired for talking about alcohol instead of the content at hand. Obviously, I mean, I think the most important thing to talk about today has to be the return of Lukanyo Am into the squad. Obviously, having not made the final squad of, the World Cup squad of 33 because of his knee injury, which sort of flared up in that last game against Argentina before the squad for the World Cup was announced. Obviously, a bit of a bittersweet moment for him to get back simply because he's replacing his mate, you know, a guy I understand the two live together, even though they don't have to. They drive together to work at the Sharks, even if they don't have to. Obviously, two very great mates. And I read your story, obviously, about Lukanya's return this morning. First things first, I really enjoyed reading it. I thought you put it together nicely. I've enjoyed a fair few of, you know, the stories that you've written out there. I mean, let's start with the irony. I think I've probably alluded to it a bit. Of all the people that Magazole maybe would have expected to replace him, it probably wouldn't have been his mate, but at some level, he's probably glad it is.
Look, when one looks at how, especially the conversations we've had around how Jesse Creel played, especially in the Ireland game, one of the folks that's the missing link in the South African backline, to just open up that particular particular door in the IS defense was Lukanyo Am. I mean, Makazole Mapimpi was very, I don't use the word distraught, but he was emotionally distressed on the 8th of August in Randburg when we spoke to him with regards to Lukanyo Am's injury. He said, no, people need to pray for him because he really wants to be in the World Cup, and hopefully he recovers in time to actually participate in the World Cup. Well, irony would have it that he is on the way to France, but replacing him. So the world works in a funny way. And I mean, even in the manner that Makazole got injured, I mean, even speaking to Gobani Bobo, former Springbok, he actually said the moment that collision happened and he saw how Makazole Mapimbi's face fell, that he kind of realized that, buddy, this is your World Cup. Because when that particular part of the head makes contact with the softer flesh of the face, is generally only one winner. I mean, it was, I would say, a similar like incident happened between Johan Taisel and Antoine Tupor, but clearly for France, they opted to rush in Tupor and Tupor with the possibility of France playing the game of their lives at the World Cup. So, look, it's very sad that Makazole has left. I mean, there's been a lot of conversations as to why suddenly behind Kurtley Arensa in the wing picking order. Sometimes these players just walk into a team environment that allows them to do more. Not that saying that Makazole wasn't doing more, but it just so happened that Kurtley's peak, not peak per se, but Kurtley's start as a wing happened to coincide with the ball, with the box moving the ball a bit more wider than they did when Makazole was playing, and then he ended up being the unintended beneficiary of the box changing game plan. Whereas Makazole for the better part of his career with Paul Arlington, had to create a lot of things from nothing, and yet he still maintained the score try. So, look, I mean, sometimes the stars don't align in that way for individuals and sometimes teams, but as we're saying, it's toss-up. Moshagala would be So, look, it may be a sad part that Makazole is out, but the return of Lukanyu Arm can only bode well and better for the Springboks.
Yeah, I mean, just to add a little to that, you know, him sort of having, this is Makazole having gone down in the pecking order a little. I think also one of the big sort of disadvantages for him is that he's literally one of the few specialist backs, you know, in the Springbok squad. I mean, I think if the last few weeks at the World Cup have shown us anything, it's how much they value sort of backline players with, you know, with utility value. So if you look around, I mean, if you're going to talk about Kurt Lear and say he can play, you know, he can play both wings plus fullback, you know, if you're going to look at Cheslin Kolbe, probably could play 10 at a push, 9, you know, in the back three positions as well, as he's shown. And then, you know, Cannon Moody, similar sort of situation. You know, he's playing 13 now. People thought he was going to, you know, he was chosen as a winger to go to the World Cup. So I think probably the first thing that kind of like disadvantaged Omar Zola is just the utility value of the guys all around him. And I don't think his performance dropped in particular. It's just that also, geez, the kids are okay, aren't they? Anyway, to move on to the next question here, I think the most important thing, obviously, to talk about is what level of fitness are we talking here? I'm asking this, obviously, with the background of and I know it's not a like for like situation, with the background of a Pollard who, you know, his whole thing was, you know, he couldn't be chosen because even though he was fit and there was nothing wrong with him, he hadn't put in enough practice for test match rugby. Granted, Lukanyo's, you know, had played much more recently than Pollard had by the time he got back to the Bok team. But what level of fitness are we talking here in terms of just the nuts and bolts? Because I'm asking this specifically because I saw that you spoke with the Sharks' biokineticist, Jimmy Wright.
Jimmy made it clear that Lukanyu most probably had 60 minutes of a test match in him. In that when he came back with two injuries, one being the knee, one being the ankle. But I think it goes back to actually what you just said, that Lukanyu had a fair bit of run. In the period when Pollard wasn't playing, Lukanyu was. Remember that he played in the back end of the URC, he trained with the Springboks, and then also got in a fair bit of test match rugby. So he's not actually starting from a cold Beasley start, whereas a Pollard was injured in the second week of May, and literally that entire 2 months was only training. In that 2 months when he was training, Lukanyu was playing up until the 5th of August. Yes, there's a bit of a gap between the 5th of August and yesterday, which would be just under 2 months since Lukanyu Arm actually played. But I think what Jimmy explained was that they put him through particularly focused training. They try to simulate match conditions as best as they can. I think the slightest advantage is that because the South African season, which is now following the Northern Hemisphere season, hasn't started, Lukanyu would have been probably part of the Sharks preseason, which may not be a bad thing because he's now will be doing those simulated training sessions with the Sharks, which would allow him to speed up the level of contact and the level of match play that he should be actually going up against once he joins the World Cup. So maybe him actually take, well, no injuries, injury can never be world time, but most probably because he's now a significant part of the Springboks' World Cup campaign. But what this particular period, firstly, as Jimmy said, allowed him to rest the knee and allowed him to rest ankle. So he was able to deal with those injuries first. And I think once able to rest and deal with those injuries first, I think then the return to fitness, the return to match fitness is then far more easier because you are now focusing on the end goal of being where you need to be to play. Instead of now, not saying putting in 78% in terms of actually getting fit because you're worried about the two niggles that you're carrying. So I think in terms of what Jimmy actually said, that Lukanyu was putting in the necessary work in conjunction with the communication that they were getting from SA Rugby's medical team. So, Pollard understandably so only went into the Tonga test match on the back of 30 minutes playing for the Leicester, for Leicester. But by the time the box were leaving at the end of in the start of August, he was already fit, but not fully match fit. But at the time, Lucanio had to take 4 steps back. But one would feel that with those 4 steps back at the shock, he's taken another 5-6 forward by firstly getting time to rest the knee and the ankle, then being able to work up his fitness and match load.
Look, it's good news that he's obviously, well, Jimmy projects that he could, you know, he could be fit enough to put in 60 minutes if, you know, if he was required to. Now, let's go back. Lucanio injured that knee, I think, wasn't it the same day as Pollard, if I'm not mistaken, in that Australia test. Yeah, in that same game.
In the late 27 August.
And look, I mean, if we're being brutally honest, obviously everyone is happy because, you know, the team's resident genius, the guy who sees the unseen, the guy who does the unthinkable in terms of putting others away is back within, you know, within the box squad. But I suspect if you watch your rugby, you would have had mild concerns first at the Sharks, throughout URC and, you know, the Champions Cup. And then obviously the early Bok tests that maybe he hadn't quite looked the same sort of resident genius.
Yes, indeed. One would probably think that, again, it would have been a case of maybe trying to rush back a bit too early because, I mean, the importance of Lucanio for the Sharks and the Springbok cannot be understated. And sometimes these things happen in sport where a player may feel fit, may feel ready, but maybe the body doesn't quite correspond to that kind of messaging the brain is actually sending to that particular part of the body that needs replenishment and rest. But I think the time away from the game, the time that he's been able to rest, this probably is the most important part because, I mean, one would feel that that particular period where he was traveling with the team for those two warm-up games were deferred against Wales and the All Blacks was the rest period. And then when he came back, that's when he started to build up his loads again. But look, he wasn't looking as sharp. And I think there was an element of desperation to how he played because I think also it is a World Cup. A World Cup does for some players like you and Andre Pollard, you get to go to World Cup 3 times. For some only get to go once. So I think some understandably so. If the Bok management were slightly rushed in trying to get back Lucanio, I mean, it was understood considering his importance, and especially at the time when Pollard wasn't there because they had an inexperienced Fluff and Mane in the Bok, who would have required every experience back around him to help him ease. His transition into the national team and so far that transition has gone very well. But I mean, now that Lucanio, as per what Jimmy was saying, he looks better, and it can only be better for the boxer. Look, I mean, if he arrives anytime today, the boxer training tomorrow, they're training on Friday, they're training on Sunday. So he's got 3 sessions where he can absolutely get to grips with where the box are from a conditioning perspective. And I mean, again, look, he's played a bit more rugby than Andre Pollard did through this year. So look, and I think those are the kind of loads that don't just vanish overnight. So one would feel that you will still carry some of those loads having played and understanding the intensity of where he needs to be from a test match perspective. But also on the other hand, I think his injury weren't as a muscular injury that is kind of difficult to repair. I think he walks back to he now comes back into the team based on understanding where the team is, how they want to play, and also just needing to make that, let's say, 5 or 6% step upwards from an intensity perspective, having helped by the fact he was with the team and played through the entire time before that August 5 injury.
Personally, would you throw him into the match day 23 for the quarterfinals?
On the bench, more probably, not as a starter. The kind of intensity needed would be a very risky thing. But again, I think putting Lucanio on the bench would also necessitate how the box would actually need to change the structure of the bench. But I think for a key game, especially a game like France, where kicking will be this thing, kicking will be a determinant. but also unlocking that French team, especially with the kind of defensive excellence they display under Sean Edwards, will require some sort of magic, some sort of, as you just said, seeing the things that seeing the unseen, or to quote Tobani Bobo, seeing the pictures that other players aren't quite able to paint until actually painted for them, will require an X factor player like Lukanya, because for all of Jesse Creel's hard work, most probably you'd have to think he is the last guy you want to see face a Gael Siku, an experienced Gael Siku, who's pretty much, I wouldn't say a Lukanya prototype, by the player who's able to, who's actually the graceful dancer in that very brutal French backline. So I think probably from a bench perspective, where if you have a bench that consists of Mane and Lukanya, if the box able to quote what you said yesterday, are able to build an innings against France, they have the guys to use the cricket parlance finishes to ensure that, if the box have a lead, from kicking and using them more effectively, they are then able to run France ragged. Because if there's anything that France haven't quite experienced, except against Ireland, where last year has been run ragged. I mean, the box took them to quite a dark place in Marseille last year, where it was 14 and 30 men at one juncture of the game. Again, the Dukanya didn't even play. France got very, very uncomfortable in that game. So I think while everyone will look at France, happily so, being the host, being the understanding of the favorites, I think they'll have it in mind that they couldn't quite put away a 14-man box side in a stronghold like Marseille. There's an even bigger stronghold at the Stade de France, where the atmosphere is going to be very much different from what we've experienced. But I think having a Lukanya up in the team also will make teams think differently in terms of how do we now defend against the box.
Just from a strategy selection perspective, if you've got him and, say, for argument's sakes, as you said earlier, Mani Libok, does that mean you're going 5-3 in terms of your split?
Well, it necessitates that. It necessitates that. Unless now we find a case where a Cheslin Colby then may be employed at 9, where now you realize that if a plastic clerk comes off, you move a Cheslin Colby to 9, which, again, with the box coaching management, that is also something that they could try, because yes, that's what they do. Thinking laterally when everyone is rectilinear. The thing is here is that you need to accommodate these two players who bring so much more from an attacking perspective, from the box, from the box. But you also look at, are you going to be compromising your forward strength? Because also, you've got the yin and the yang of having the Marco van Staden and Dion Fury issue. Which one of those two do you pick on the bench? Because now, what are you losing from a throwing perspective, from a scamming perspective, in terms of choosing in between a Dion and a Marco? Because the one thing the box can't compromise on when playing against the French is their forward strength. I mean, even France, as an ode to the Springboks last year, they picked the 6-2 bench. For that Marseille test, where they needed to pick Sekou Makalou, who could move between wing and flank. They ended up deploying him at wing last year because of Jonathan Danti coming off after that clash with Peter Steph Du Toit. So the French went 6-2 in that game in respect to the box forwards. So again, it's going to be one of those, to quote you, that selection guessing game, where the box need to find a place for these two players. But are they going to compromise a strength? Or they're going to, again, work on the versatility, where they'll look at all of the starting backs and they'll say, hey, we need you to actually come in and scrub off. And when you look at to quote a term that's been circulating in social media, when you look at the box A1 backline, that of now the general consists of Faf de Klerk, now you have to vacillate between Andre Pollard and Mani Libok, but Kirkley Arons, Damien Willems, and Cheslin Colby. It is Cheslin who most probably of the guys in the backline can deputize at number 9. But do you want a Cheslin to deputize at number 9 in the Rugby World Cup quarterfinal? I don't think so. But knowing how Rassi, knowing how Jacques thinks, there wouldn't be averse to that thinking. But again, do you want Lukanya Arms to start a Rugby World Cup quarterfinal? If he's fit and is able to play through that 60 minutes. Yes, I don't think the demands of playing 13 are similar to the demands of playing in the forwards where there's a lot more physicality one needs to deal with. But a player like Kulukanyo Arm will be heavily marked, will be given a lot more attention as compared to Jesse Krill. And I think that most probably would be the slight risk that the Bucks may have to think about. But then again, risk and reward is how Jacques and Rassi live.
Bit of a controversial question, so you gotta have to watch your words if these guys listen to what you say, if these guys listen to this podcast. In what you've seen of Dion Fury as the sort of second string hooker for the team, if you Joseph Dweba, how do you feel about them going with Lukanyo to replace Mapimpi instead of actually going with him?
Remember, there's a saying in our language, Tosa, umlomo wakho lipolisa lakho. Your word is your bond. We were together at that
conference. He said cop. Polisa is a cop, dude. What's all this bond?
I'm just using an analogy of a play on words.
And where is this Tosa from? Where, like, your mouth is your cop?
At the press conference where he said that if they lose a specialist player, they will replace a player with that specialist player. So we then held him to that as journalists, which is why the move to pick Andre ahead of Joseph when replacing Hooker was surprising, because it is a specialist position. You need someone who does that job on a daily basis. So if you are Joseph, you'd be very hurt, because you'd have been in that box setup. You'd have been well-versed in what they need. And I think if that was the messaging that they sent to him, and then it is changed when now the team's demand become very different, it hurts, because you'd ideally think that if a hooker falls or a prop falls, you are the next. If a prop falls, a Thomas Toy then would feel that I'm next on the list, even though there is a Trevor Nyakano who can play both times in the scrum. If a hooker gets injured, which was the case with a Malcolm Mark, you would feel that, hey, I should be next on the list, because this is what Jacques Ninaba said in public, that if they lose a specialist player, it is madness for them not to pick another specialist player. So they changed on their word. They reneged on their word. So if you're a Joseph and that is the message being sent to you, and then it changes down the line, it makes the dynamic between him and the coaches rather different. Even if they may have explained in private that there is a possibility of you not being picked, because the selection picture has changed because of these kicking requirements that we need. But if that's the message that you send in the departure press conference to the public, and then you do something different in the World Cup because your demands have changed, and it sends out a very different message to the player that you've actually dropped, to the player that you've actually not picked. So if you're Joseph right now, look, the heart's in shreds at the moment, to be fair. But look, he's still young enough. He's got another World Cup, but even if they may have shared it privately with them, I suspect that there will be a slight trust deficit between Joseph and the Springbok coaching management at the moment.
We need to talk about this proposed fix between Scotland and Ireland. I don't know. You know, if you watch enough of these things, you sit and you go, I mean, it's got to be ridiculous that, you know, these guys would deal with the permutations in such a way that would, you know, just suit them and sort of knock out South Africa. Should we even be talking about this? Like, to me, it makes no sense, because, you know, ultimately, I don't see how, say, a team like Ireland would benefit from it. It's not like it changes their quarterfinal opponent. When I say changes their quarterfinal opponent, I mean either the All Blacks or France, simply because, you know, before the tournament started, that's who they were going to play anyway. So what I'm saying is, I mean, is it, you know, if there is anything we need to discuss about it, because honestly, I don't think we should. Is there something to hold on to along the lines of, maybe they saw enough of the box when they played against them last weekend, or, you know, 2 weekends ago, to sit and think, you know what, actually, we don't want to meet these guys again later in the tournament. I mean, is it even a thing to talk about, Trucks?
Look, France is a country that, when it comes to conspiracy theories, is unparalleled and unrivaled. That particular question was actually asked by a French journalist. It was an odd question in that press conference. Frederick's name, his surname escaped me. But Jacques was very surprised, and I mean, his answer was as startled as the question itself. But Ireland have so much to gain from beating Scotland. Firstly, they beat Scotland, they go 17-0, which means they equal the Boxers' 1997-98 run against Tier 1 nations.
Yeah.
They go in and win their quarterfinals 18-0. They win the semifinals 19-0. They win the World Cup, it's 20-0. That is the Tier 1 record of going unbeaten. They would, in this particular run, they've beaten the Box twice. They've beaten the All Blacks twice. They've beaten France. They've beaten everyone who's come in their way. So why would they now sacrifice their momentum? I mean, and also Ireland is a country that is based on competitiveness, that is based on a lot of honesty, virtues, and values. It would be very weird of them to spit the dummy now when they've worked so hard to get to where they are. I mean, they're a country that historically have dominated Scotland from a 5-6 nations perspective. I mean, I think Scotland have only beaten Ireland 5 times in the past 23 years.
Yeah.
So for them to actually, at a stage as big as the World Cup, then decide, no, we're going to play half-hearted. I mean, it's a change of heart and a change of momentum that is difficult to arrest. Because either way, they've got an all-black side that is hurting that they need to face. The last thing you want to do is to drop momentum against the all-blacks. Because even though the all-blacks aren't as formidable as the 2011 and the 2015 vintage, they remain a team that on their day, if they start a game very well and they ride that momentum, and Ireland will know this very well because they caught on a proper momentum swing against All Blacks in the 2019 quarterfinal.
Yeah.
They trailed badly, and even though they fought back towards the end of the game, that game was long gone. The last thing Ireland want now, especially with the quarterfinal looming, is to give away the hard-earned momentum. They most probably have shown that they can live long with the Box. They've got the goods to take All Blacks to places that they don't like. They're happy to dance with France and England. Why now would they want to drop momentum against a team that generally most of the time, even if with the eyes blindfolded and one arm behind them, it's a team that they'll beat 9 out of 10. And they've shown that over the past 23 years that Scotland isn't a team that they generally worry about. So, look, I mean, also, I mean, if you look at the machinations behind the World Cup, how it got to France, look, this is a country that lives on conspiracy theories where they ask those particular questions. And I mean, that conversation, they will never go away in terms of how France got the World Cup and whether they could be conniving to a particular team play in the playoffs. But the fact remains that Ireland are too good a team to... And look, it's the World Cup and anything can happen. But Ireland are a very good side, probably and they deserve a number one side in the world. But they're also a very, very honest country that trades on honest virtues. This isn't a game that they want to lose. This isn't a game where they want to work back everything that they've done since the 9th of July last year when they beat the All Blacks in Dunedin. This is the point where they're feeling that, like England 2003, that we are happy to have a bad game here and there, but if we peak at the right time, everything else that we've done will fall into the line of history because everyone will remember what we've done to win the World Cup and winning of the World Cup. So I honestly can't see Ireland actually participating in such connival to see the Springboks be able. Well, the Box have done what they needed to do. Actually, the call is now on Scotland to actually do their best to win the game. And if Ireland play to their potential, ideally we should see South Africa and Ireland progressing to the knockout round.
All right, Chucks, thank you so much for those insights. I really have appreciated our two chats. That's it from us today. Please catch up again with us tomorrow. Maybe this, I'm not sure if it'll be exactly the same place though, because it sounds an awful lot like the big boys from Cape Town are coming back tomorrow. That is Lloyd Bernard and Herman Mostert, the actual original superstars of this. But that's it from us. Thank you very much. Cheers. We'll be right back.